Welcome to Your Next Mission Podcast with the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley. Proudly presented by Cavalry Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans.
Hello out there, warriors, past and present, and your families, and thank you for what you do and what you continue to do for our great country. And like I said before, I know the kind of sacrifices you make for this great country. So God bless you and keep up the great work. Welcome to Season 3 of Your Next Mission Video Podcast, a program initiative of the American Freedom Foundation. I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and your host. Always love saying that. Before we get started today, I personally want to thank our presenting sponsors, Cavalry Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, Veterans United Home Loans, for their generous support of making Your Next Mission happen. They love our veterans and families. As I always say, we love them too. We have a great show for you. In fact, we have a wonderful show for you today. We're going to be focusing on the Women's Memorial. And I'm so excited to introduce Chief Warrant Officer 5, retired, I got to make sure I say that, Miss Phyllis J. Wilson, President of the Military Women's Memorial. Welcome, Chief. So good to have you on the show.
Well, thank you, SMA.
Well, God bless you for what you're doing. I know the audience is really eager about hearing all the stuff that you're doing with the Women's Memorial, and I certainly am too. But before we get into that, can you tell the audience just a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I joined the Army as a private. Voice intercept operator, went to the Defense Language Institute out in California for almost a year to learn German, and was then assigned with the 3rd Armored Division, defending the Fulda Gap back in the 1980s. Had an opportunity to apply and become an Army Warrant Officer, and did a total then of 37 years in the Army, retiring then as a Chief Warrant Officer 5. It's been an amazing career, and got to travel the world. Maybe not to all the places that I would have chosen, but I got to travel the world.
You know, it's really bad. Most people that get on the show, I sort of say, I always have 25 or 30 or 32, and I had 36. And I always call them a quitter. I guess now you can call me a quitter. You know, so that's really not fair. We're starting out rough here already. hey, Chief, the things that are so remarkable to me about the Military Women's Memorial is all the generations of women that you represent from conflicts dating all the way back to the Revolutionary War. Can you talk just a little bit about that?
I'd love to. So the Military Women's Memorial, we are 25 years old, or will be next month, and we have the wonderful pleasure and honor to tell these stories of these women before they were legally allowed to be part of the military. But they loved their country just as much as our men did. And some of them disguised themselves as men so they could serve on the battlefield and fight all the way back to the Revolutionary War. And it was not until 1901 that the Army Nurse Corps was created, and in 1908, the Navy Nurse Corps. So the only women that were permitted to serve for a very long time, really, were nurses. But they were not addressed, even though they were paid less than their male counterparts. They were either called Miss or Nurse. They were never addressed by a rank. They were called relative rank, and that's how they were paid. Now, the women then could serve for a career, but all the way up to World War II, anybody else that served outside of being a nurse, as a mechanic, a clerk typist, you name it, they could only serve for the duration of a war plus 6 months, and then that was it. They could not have a career. And so we pick up from when legislation finally did give us that opportunity, but we could be more than 2% of the total military. If you got pregnant, you were discharged. You could not hold rank above lieutenant colonel or commander. All of those things changed as we became an all-volunteer military. And so to watch the metamorphosis of what women have been permitted to do, both by society and by the military, all the way up till today, is really astounding.
Yeah.
And so that's part of what we do at the Military Women's Memorial, is tell these incredible stories.
Yeah. What's the percentage now? I think last time I looked in the Army, it's about 15% of the Army is women.
It's up to about 17%. Of course, the Marine Corps has the lowest at 9%. But overall, the average through the Department of Defense is just about 20% now of the military is composed of women. Although, as on the veteran side, it's the fastest growing segment of the veteran population.
I got to tell you two things. I don't know if I told you this before, but the I sit on a board for Training and Doctrine Command that talked about women in combat arms, and so they had a few enlisted guys on there, a lot of general officers that was on the board. But when I got in there, I said, this is real simple. I've worked with women quite a, I guess probably when I got to be a division sergeant major, I didn't work with a whole lot of women because I was in combat arms units. They wasn't in combat arms units. When I got to be division, I worked with, I think I told you before, Mary Sutherland, Sergeant Major Sutherland. Oh my goodness, she's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful person. So anyway, I asked them, what are we looking for? They said, well, we're trying to see if they can meet the standard. And I said, well, this is real simple to me. He said, what's that? If you establish a standard and they meet the standard, then you let them in that MOS. That's the basic line. And so for us to start saying you're not qualified, you can't do it, doesn't make no sense to me. And so I said, just, women are, I quite frankly, to be honest with you, women are just as tough, are tougher than men in a lot of cases with a lot of stuff they, I certainly wouldn't have a baby or something like that. But I'm just, that's sort of joking there a little bit. But women are tough and really, I think are wonderful leaders. There's no question in my mind about that.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Just earlier this year in May, down in at Fort Benning for the Sullivan Cup, of course, Major Chris Griest now just promoted to major as an infantry officer, the first woman to become a field grade infantry officer. So that's one of those really great stories, and certainly she made it through Ranger School. She is leading by example, and now her next assignment, she's going up to West Point to help create that next generation of leaders.
Well, yeah, I got to tell you a funny story. I was when I was a division sergeant major, I went down, I think it was Hanau, Germany, and I was visiting a unit. And I've seen this young soldier. She's probably about 22 or 23. And it looked like she's chewing tobacco, to tell you the truth. And I asked the platoon sergeant, I says, is she a pretty good soldier? And he says, oh, yeah, she's the best. I said, what makes her the best? She said, she's beat up everybody in the platoon but me. And I said, is that right? He said, yeah. I said, why hadn't she beat you up? He said, because I'm in charge. That's the only reason she hadn't kicked his butt. So it's really sort of funny. I also understand that you've recently reopened 6 months of renovation. You have some renovation there, and you did some more stuff in the renovation.
We did. Now, the front curved wall of the memorial was built in the 1930s, but the rest of the memorial behind that curved wall is like a museum. And 25 years of foot traffic at the entrance to Arlington National Cemetery, we needed to do some updating. And so that was phase one. We have a phase two yet to come. But yes, we closed the doors this past summer, winter, and opened in just before Memorial Day, May of this year, and did some significant changes, including one space that will be dedicated in October 16th. For Brigadier General Wilma Vaught, the founder and president emeritus of the memorial, who had a stunning Air Force career. And then after she retired from that, she took this on as her next big project.
Is there anything other than that new? You talked about a couple other things that you're doing new in the memorial. Is there anything else that you're doing new in there?
Oh, we've got all kinds of
Well,
programming.
tell me what they are here. I want to hear
I'd love to.
them.
So we do have a YouTube channel. Anybody that just goes to YouTube and searches under Military Women's Memorial, you'll find a number of either short 3-minute videos or 45-minute videos where we've interviewed people like the past Surgeon General of the Army, Patty Horoho. So you can find anything, whether you want a longer story, short story. But within the memorial, some of our new programming, one of those is next month, October, is Breast Cancer Month. And we are doing an exhibit in there about women that either while they were on active duty or once they became a veteran were diagnosed with breast cancer and had the surgeries. And we took some fantastic photos that I was not personally sure how I felt about it until I witnessed one of the photo sessions of these women that are basically draped from the waist down. Their scars are showing. But there's a look in their eye and a tilt to their chin that there is no doubt they are not conquered. They are not defeated. These are strong women that went through cancer and came out the other side. And so this is one of these calls to action to really make sure women know that, you know, if you serve in the military, especially in Iraq and Afghanistan, studies are already indicating you are 37 times more likely to develop breast cancer than your civilian counterparts. So that's part of what we do, is making sure that the currently serving and those that have already served are aware of this. Another great one that we're doing is with the Women, Peace, and Security Program, which Department of Defense has been directed by Congress to look at this WPS, or Women, Peace, and Security Program. So we have General Scotty Miller, the last commanding general for ISAF, as I call it, in Afghanistan. So General Scotty Miller, the last commander in Afghanistan, and he is coming back. He is our honorary chairman of our WPS program, and he's helping to launch this program October 7th with a fireside chat, as he talks about both the women that he served with in special operations and the cultural support teams, as well as we will also have present that day Afghan women that served in the CST counterparts, the female tactical platoons in the Afghan military. Some of those women were fortunately able to get out of Afghanistan in time, because their name is also on the short list that the Taliban is looking for. And in fact, those that they have found, they have murdered them.
Well, you know, one of the things you said a minute ago is about the impacts of women in the military. That was one of the questions I asked when I was in TRADOC. I said, you know, we talk about all the things we do and all this other stuff. What is the impact as far as having children? I mean, there's a lot of things that we just don't know the answer to. We won't know the answer for a lot of years there. But I could see that stuff. The other thing, I think it's when you talk about the photos of women that have cancer, I think it's a great idea to show those pictures, because I think reality is truth. You know, let people see exactly what happens. And, you know, it's one thing to talk about it, but when you see it, when you see what happens and the things that do occur, and you see some, just like you said, some strong women just standing there and just letting everybody see exactly what it's all about. I think it's, you know, some people might think it's a little, maybe it's a little too much, but I personally think there's too many things we hide from people. You know, open up and let them see it, you know, so.
We see the burn.
Yeah.
We see the scars on other parts of the body. Yeah. And yes, it is sometimes for some people very difficult to look at. I'm a registered nurse. And So when I also look at the demographics and making sure that men and women all know, because, you know, I just can't help but believe, you know, men can get breast cancer too.
Yeah.
And the issue is if women that have served in Iraq and Afghanistan are 37 times more likely than their female counterparts to develop breast cancer, is there any correlation with our males, the men that have served and have been in, and not just those in uniform? What about our contractors? What about our government civilians that have been in and out? What about even the USO men and women that have gone over to entertain the troops that have been in and out of that box for 10, 12, 15, 20 times? And some of them, whether it's related to that, we don't know yet, but some of those entertainers have also been diagnosed now with cancers, rare cancers. That's the unusual piece. It isn't just the run of the mill. It's a rare version thereof.
Yeah. I'll get off cancer. I had a good friend of mine. His name is I won't say his name, but he was a good friend of mine. I know him for years. We golfed. We really got promoted together. And he had a rash from Iraq that was all over his body. And he called me. We talked about it. He must have went to three or four different doctors. And I remember I remember he said, well, General so-and-so has introduced me to his doctor. We're going to start. And they never could figure it out. And they never could get rid of his rash. And so there's a lot of stuff that, you know, you just don't know what goes on in those places, what they're blowing up, whether or not they're blowing up chemicals or whatever. And you're right in that area and you may not have any kind of protection. So I agree with you 100%. We're talking with Miss Phyllis Wilson, I should say Chief Phyllis Wilson, President of the Military Women's Memorial. And you're watching Your Next Mission video podcast with me, your host, Jack F. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major. I mean, and don't forget, if you're enjoying this discussion, and I know that you are, because we're talking about women that sacrifice so much for us, you know, for this country. And just like me and the Chief was talking a minute ago, we don't know the impact that war has on women. Now, we probably won't know for years, but this is an important issue. It's someone that we need to listen to, we need to talk about. So anyway, we need to be a part of a family too. So please like us, click on that subscribe button down below there. Join our team because we're gonna help each other out. Chief, we're coming up in just a couple of days, isn't it? Like October 14th and 16th, you will be celebrating, this is important now, the 25th anniversary of the Military Women's Memorial. What a great milestone. And let's talk about the significance of that week and the activities that are planned.
Of course. So 25 years, who knew? And when the doors opened 25 years ago, there were 40,000 people that lined all the way down to the traffic circle that heads to the Lincoln Memorial. And people, mostly, many of them were World War II women that had only been able to serve for the duration of the war plus 6 months, and then were very unceremoniously sent home. So they had never gotten any kind of recognition. And certainly that's not why we serve. We do it because we're answering our country's call. But when they see other people getting ticker tape parades and being recognized, and even many of those women, nearly 400,000 that served in World War II, they, when they tried to avail themselves of the GI Bill and all of the things, many of them were pushed away. The schools didn't realize that women could be veterans too.
Yeah.
And so we still go through that. So those women were there. Sadly, many of those women have passed away in the last 25 years, but we have this whole new crop. More women have served in combat since we opened our doors 25 years ago than all the way back to the Revolutionary War.
Oh, wow.
So there's young generations of women that many of them don't even know there is a national memorial to honor and tell their stories. So that's why we're excited for the 25th anniversary. We're going to do everything from luncheons where it's just an Army luncheon, sea services, the Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard all will come together and have a luncheon, and then the Air and Space Forces. And you'll be glad to know, Jack, that we've invited Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Force, Joanne Bass, to be our key speaker at the Air and Space Forces luncheon. And she's a rock star.
Well, I seen her on LinkedIn the other day. She's really, she's all over LinkedIn, always putting a really, really solid message. She's a she's a good learner. I was going to say something a minute ago. It's a shame that it sometimes takes us a long time to fix things that we did wrong. But I think it's because we're better educated. We understand things a lot more. We're really a young country. Yeah, but we're growing and developing. So it's good that we see the issues and we're able to fix those kind of issues. And you're really right. When you look back at some of the females that we didn't recognize where we should have recognized them, just like I was talking about Mary Sutherland, she's a tough soldier. But we're doing it now, and we need to continue to do these things as much as we can, as long as we can, that's for sure.
Correct. But I would say too, Sergeant Major, that one of the key things is it shouldn't be recognition because it's women.
Yeah.
It's recognition because they've done something of such a degree, such a caliber, and that their service and their courage sets them apart from all the other servicemen and women.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think some of us grow a little weary, to be honest, that when we're recognized as the first woman in a role or the first, you know, ethnicity in a role or whatever. It's like, okay, we get that, but there will come a time when all of that sort of falls to the wayside. Are they the best? Are they selected to fill some of these key leadership roles across the military and even in civil sector? Are they filling it because we're trying to build out a diversity matrix, or because that man, woman of whatever ethnicity is the best person for the job? And that's where I hope one day our nation gets to.
You know, I always talk about Mary Sutherland because she really was a motivator for me, because she really, I'm sort of a funny story, but she told me one time, she says, I was a new division sergeant major and I got all the brigades in there. We're talking. And I said, Sergeant Major, how do you want me to treat you? She said, like everybody else, you know? So I said, well, so I treated her like everybody else. I didn't cut her no slack. And it was really funny. One more story and I'll get off this real quick. Is I remember I was pulling the gate one time at Bad Kreuznach, and there was a female that was on guard, and she was pregnant. And so I went, I said, oh, she check my ID, whatever it was, flag me through, and I went into office and stuff. Well, about 20 minutes later, I had somebody come in and say, "Hey, you know, Sergeant, what are you doing putting somebody who's pregnant on guard?" I said, "First of all, that's not my responsibility. Some of the unit's doing that responsibility. But let me just tell you something. Does she have a profile? Is there a profile? I mean, her doctor's the one that make that decision. So don't start making some kind of standards based on your perception of what's right looks like. The Army has a standard, and you'll enforce that standard." And I said, "She's going to stay on guard until the doctor says, you know, whatever." But you got to make common sense. You can't make, I guess what I'm saying is you can't make your own standard. What you think is right and what's right sometimes is not the same thing. I understand your founding president, Brigadier General Wilma Vaught, will be there. She sure has an incredible story. Can you share that with us?
She's a little bit of nothing. She's 5'1".
I'm a little bit of nothing.
Well, you're not 5'1" there, Sergeant Major. So she graduated from college in 1952 and started working for what was becoming one of the big computer companies at the time. And she realized over the next couple of years, she was never going to be in any kind of a leadership role simply because she was a woman in the early 50s. Yeah. So in 1957, at the age of 27 years of age, she joined the United States Air Force as a lieutenant.
Yeah.
And every assignment she had, then she was, in fact, because it was capped, we couldn't be more than 2%. And she said, no, the Air Force was less than 1% women when she joined.
Oh, my goodness.
And so she loved the assignments. She served until 1985, served in Saigon, Vietnam, as a non-nurse Air Force woman. And when she retired in 1985 as a one-star with nearly 5 years time and grade, she was the senior ranking woman in not just the Air Force, the entire Department of Defense. So shortly thereafter, within a year or two, she's now been pulled into this foundation that's trying to raise the money and get Congress to approve by public law the creation of this memorial. She does all of that and more. And there are presidents on down that say, you cannot tell General Vaught no. She won't take no for an answer. She will hound you until you finally capitulate. and that is what it took in order to get this memorial created, built, opened, and to this day. So she has been lauded with every award you can imagine, from being inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame in Seneca Falls, New York, where Katie Stanton and the early suffragettes came from. That was in the year 2000. All kinds of awards ever since, and to this year culminated by going to the White House and the president awarding her the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest award in our land.
Yeah.
So she's just doing all kinds of things. And part of the renovations we did this past winter was we took the movie theater apart, leveled the floor so it's a flat floor, and it now is multi-purpose. We can do sit down dinners, we can do documentary screenings, we can do boardroom meetings, you can do anything in that room now because it's not just old velour movie theater seats.
Yeah.
But we've also decided it was appropriate that it is going to be renamed the Brigadier General Wilma L. Vaught Center, or Vaught Center for short.
Yeah.
And on Sunday, the 16th of October of this year, General Vaught will do the ribbon cutting to officially open the Vaught Center to the public. So we're really excited about that.
Well, isn't there probably a lot more places that we recognize, you know, just the Women Memorial, but there's other places throughout the Army, I guess. We certainly have recognized women in named streets or whatever. Are we doing things like that?
We absolutely are. And of course, the Army Women's Museum is down at what is now called Fort Lee. Mm-hmm. And of course, with the renaming commission that has looked at what the names might be. So there's two installations in Virginia that are likely going to be renamed. One is AP Hill, mm-hmm. which will probably, under current conjecture, will be named for our only woman Medal of Honor recipient, Dr. Mary Walker from the Civil War.
Yeah.
So that's the one. And the other would be Fort Lee down near Richmond, which will be a combined name of General Gregg, G-R-E-G-G. And he's the only living person that they've got on this selection of renamings, but it would be General Gregg's and Charity Adams Early, the commanding officer of an all-Black unit from World War II that just was earlier this year awarded the Congressional Gold Medal, the 6888.
Yeah.
So it would become Greg Adams, Fort Greg Adams.
Yeah. I always thought they ought to name it after, they ought to name a lot of installations out of enlisted guys and gals now, but
I concur. Yeah, 80% of the military is enlisted.
Yeah. And sometimes it's really, I mean, general officers, I think, you know, all of them do a great job, but you have a lot of enlisted soldiers that do a lot. And it's really, I always thought it was 81 to 82 or 83% now, but there's a large enlisted force, just like the Women's Memorial, that should be recognized. A lot of times we don't recognize it. It doesn't even, sometimes I don't think it makes sense to me, and I don't know why they do that, because I think they're, I guess whoever talks the most gets, you know, whatever, but I think we ought to look more about the enlisted corps. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. You're watching your Next Mission video podcast.
You're watching Your Next Mission, proudly presented by The Cavalry Agency. They help brands dominate no matter their size. Ideas, strategy, action. This is Cavalry. Learn more at cavalry.com. Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Purdue Global, providing affordable online education for hardworking adults. Learn more about a personalized, innovative, and world-class education at purdueglobal.edu. Veterans United Home Loans, the number one VA lender for 5 straight years. If you're buying, they're funding your dreams. Learn more at veteransunited.com. Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're blessed to be here today with Chief Warrant Officer 5, retired Miss Phyllis Wilson, President of the Memorial, Military Women's Memorial. I want to make sure I get that correct. And I want to remind each one of you to reach out to me directly. Tell us about your transition. Tell us what topics you'd like us to cover. You can also call or text me at 844-424-1134, and I'll actually reach back out to you. Or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Okay, let's pick it up where we left off. Chief Wilson, I'll make sure we got that right now. We're heading into our final segment with you today, and there's still just have a couple more topics I want to cover. And I've enjoyed immensely talking to you this morning. Is there what's the number two issues that you have in the Women's Memorial?
Well, SMA, thank you again for the opportunity to share this with yourself and with your audience. Is the Military Women's Memorial is sort of that hidden diamond in plain sight that people just don't know that much about, even though we're at the entrance to Arlington National Cemetery. So two things I'd like to actually share with you. One, people think because we're a national monument that we are federally funded, and we are not. We're a 501c3 foundation that relies on the generosity of Americans to keep us up and running, to tell these incredible stories, to safeguard the artifacts that we have that go back all the way to the Civil War. It costs money to safeguard them in climate-controlled environment, in acid-free boxes, and we have more artifacts than you can ever fathom. If we had an army, Sergeant Major, that was of just people with small feet, we could outfit the entire army with boots. But anybody that's bigger than about a size, seven and a half, eight, we might run into the problems. Yeah. But we safeguard all of that, as well as tell all these stories and look at the programming. So we rely on the generosity of America. And as we're hitting that 25-year mark, not only do we need to operate, we also have phase two of major renovations to tell these more fulsome stories, especially of the global war on terror. We have not refreshed to the degree that we would like to be able to do so, but we can't without money. And so I'd make that plea that if you want to learn more, go to womensmemorial.org. You can see all of the programming and all of the stories that we're already telling, but we could do so much more. And the way that we tell these stories is through our national database called the Register. And we're asking every woman that has served and is serving still to put your story into our national database. It likens it to a big baseball card.
Yeah.
Your photo, your years of service, your memorable experiences, which are stunning, whether it's a gal that got a box of Twinkies in Vietnam, as she normally did from her loving sister, but this particular one was filled with black ants, and what she did to mitigate that, to some very powerfully sad stories. It's amazing what we learn about each individual woman, but collectively from the branch of service, from the era, and how things have changed for military women. Before, you know, the idea of being pregnant and being a gate guard, which I did myself also in Germany.
Hope you did a good job.
I was awesome at it. Thank you very much, SMA. Yeah. And I did not mind it at all. Yeah. My sergeant major at the time said, there's nothing wrong with you. You're pregnant. That's not an illness.
Yeah.
We did PT right up until it was time to deliver the baby.
Yeah.
And I was grateful for it. Honestly, I was already fit. I kept doing what I was capable of doing. Might not have been with the fast pack near the end, but nonetheless, my recovery after having the babies was swift because I was already fit. And I think sometimes the idea of setting that aside, but we look from when women were discharged, if you got pregnant, you couldn't even serve, to now the idea that we have all of the opportunities to serve. And so the database is really not about you. Don't tell me I didn't do much. You're standing on the shoulders of giants. You're standing on the shoulders of women that served in an era when they couldn't even vote and they served.
Yeah.
And how do we tell that story, that historical timeline, that what we are doing today is so different from what they did when we don't have the current stories? So I would encourage you, whether you're serving now, you know a woman that is serving, or your grandmother served years ago, you can go in and create an account on our website, that womensmemorial.org, top right corner, create an account. Men, women, served or not, you can all have an account. And on the left-hand side, you can search for a service woman. See if that family member, that friend, is their story already in our database? And if it isn't, right up above that, it says register a service woman. Tag, you are it.
Yeah.
Tell her story, please, especially if she's already passed on. If you have a photo of her, if you can tell any portion of when she served, where she served, did she receive any awards? I mean, I stumble across incredible stories. This lady has 7 campaign stars from World War II.
Oh, I get it.
A surgical nurse with a bronze star.
Yeah.
So you can't make this up, and we don't want to. We want the stories to be put into here. We have 303,000. But that's 10%, 10%. And so with that 2 million living women veterans and those that have passed before us, we need somebody that knows their story to encourage them either to put it in, or if they're gone, put it in for them. But please check our database first. And you can just type in any last name, type in Tilly and see whose names might pop up there and just read their story. You will be impressed, and you're going to stand a little bit taller realizing what some of these women have done for this country. Those are the two things I need help with.
Yeah, it's really funny that when you say that, I was thinking about women that I work with in the military. And I got it again, it's a sort of a funny story. So I'm the division sergeant major, and the driver I had got sick, and we had to get a substitute driver. So it happened to be a female. And I said, I don't care. Yeah, I was going to Grafenwehr. And we got up to Grafenwehr, we got a flat tire. And she said to me, Sergeant Major, we got a flat tire. I said, yeah. She said, what am I gonna do? I said, I guess you're gonna change it. but she was smart now. She got out and got the maintenance guys, they jacked it up and changed the tire. But I wanted to, I guess the reason I told her that was that I wanted her to understand she's a soldier. You can't be a soldier and then try to be a female. You know what I'm talking about? You know, you can't go back and forth. You're a soldier 24/7, and
correct,
you're going to be treated as a Spec 4 or E5 or Staff Sergeant or Sergeant, or First Sergeant, Sergeant Major, whatever. But you're a soldier first, and you be treated just like everybody else. And I thought that was always important, especially to me, to treat them all the same. And that's, again, Mary Sutherland, Sergeant Major Sutherland, had taught me to just treat everybody the same. And I think I think sometimes that's what the difficulty is. You know, and I've told this story a lot. It would hurt me, and I've seen a lot of death, and I'm sure you have in the Army too, but I've seen a lot of death in the Army. And I've always told people, one of the things I'd really just hate to see, I'd hate to see a woman killed. It would bother me a lot more. Even seeing a man killed would bother me, but it'd be different. I don't know if that makes sense or not. But it'd just be different for me, maybe because of my age, and that's always bothered me. So I just, you know.
Well, I think we're all wired, you know. And the way that we grew up was, there was deference given to the ladies.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and the protective nature. We can talk about this more, I suppose. But there is, we are hardwired in our DNA.
Yeah.
You know, women are like, you know, we'll protect our children with our own lives.
Absolutely.
In a heartbeat, you know, but we also do expect, and I think that's where sometimes we run into problems when men and women wearing the, you know, the same Army uniforms sometimes don't seem to understand this kinship that we have, and we, that expectation that we have, but absolutely, it is, it's like seeing a baby that's been killed in a combat zone or something, you know. I mean, that just, it just pulls at your heartstrings.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're all wired in that way. It just is, you know, for centuries, war was a man's job.
Yeah.
And so now that things are changing and, you know, we have this opportunity, so we could spend a whole nother podcast talking about, you know, registering for the draft for women and all of those kind of questions. More to follow.
Well, for me, again, I'll go back to it. It's open. If you want to, everything's got to be the same, register, do it the same. It's all got to be equal. I was just thinking about something. I probably should tell this at the end, but I remember yesterday, I've been married a long time, been married 50 years now, but I asked my wife, I said, she said something like, you make all the decisions. And I said, well, I don't make the decisions. She said, yeah, you make all the decisions. Well, what do you do? Just give me recommendations? That's right. I said, well, what if I don't take your recommendations? She said, you're stupid. So I know how that thing goes right there. So I said, oh, no. She said it in a different way, and she chuckled a little bit. But it's really right. You know, I don't know what happened when I got married. Somehow, I was joking with somebody the other day, somehow the woman is really the leader of the house. I mean, the man sort of, supposed to do the heavy caring, I guess, or whatever. But my wife is absolutely my best friend. You know, first of all, let me say, what you're doing is so important. And again, I've said this to you before, and I'll say it to you again. Whatever I can do to help you, I'll certainly do it. Because, not because of you, because of a lot of people like you, and like Mary Sutherland, and people I've worked with throughout my military career that meant so much to me, that I watched them in their sacrifices. I watched them in the things they did. And I try to do, from my little perspective now, I try to do all I could to make it equal, to make it fair, to make everybody treat them the same. I remember I used to tell the all the brigade sergeant majors, I say, look, you know, you can do whatever you want, but everybody's the same, and I'm going to treat you all the same, and you're going to treat her the same too. And we got through that, and all of them understood. You know, we had to, you know, they knew that I had the hammer, so they better listen. So, hey, any final thoughts? Anything you want to share with the audience? I know you already gave that website already once, but you can do that again if you anything you want to put out there.
I just want to be clear to the audience that, you know, I have four sons that are combat veterans, and I'm very proud to be a soldier, not a woman soldier, just a soldier.
That's
happy
right.
to have served in that capacity, jumping out of airplanes, doing all the things that I was permitted to do in my era.
Yeah.
And now what I see is happening. But again, to tell those stories, every person's story, every woman that has served, to me is so incredibly important. Many of these, we're never going to write a book about them, not like SMA.
We should write a book about them. There's no question about that.
But some of these ladies, like they said, you know, I served for one tour and got out, and I, you know, I was a mechanic. Mm-hmm. But when we compile them, when you do a collection of stories, that's the fascinating part. But every one of these individual short stories is what makes this incredible diary journal of women in the military in the United States. And without each of those, you know, if they don't claim it, when they cease to exist, so does their story. And we can only tell the stories that we have in our archive.
Yeah.
So if they don't put it in there and researchers don't have access to it to sort of see how have things changed from when you were discharged, if you got pregnant, to now, you know, all of the services that the military now provides, from lactation rooms to whatever, that would have just been unheard of not that many years ago. But we have to find a way to tell those stories, and not just from, you know, the female perspective, but I'm talking about from a military perspective.
Absolutely.
What have women done that have safeguarded this nation in your own little lane? Mine was military intelligence. You know, did I change the world? No. But collectively, did we? Oh, yes, we did. And that's where I need the help, is really please find that woman in your life, whether it's a grandmother, a great-grandmother, or a daughter that is serving today, and help them to get their stories into this database. And it can always be updated anytime.
Yeah.
So that's the big push that we have, is to how do we help be that historical repository for every bit of women in the military stories.
You know, it's really funny. Every time you say something, I think about something else. I'm going to tell you a quick story. So we had a guy when I was down at CENTCOM. He says he wanted this young soldier to get up and brief. And he was an intel guy, intel soldier. He got up there and says, I have no intelligence. I about fell out of the chair. It was so cute. The other thing is, you talked about me writing a book. The reason I wrote a book is because it wasn't really about me. It's the fact that I wanted people to understand about the military, and maybe understand a little piece of my life too, but understand the kind of sacrifices our veterans and our family members make. And I think, and we talked about it a minute ago, the enlisted corps, you don't really hear a lot from the enlisted corps. Yeah, certain people you probably do, but a lot of guys are sort of quiet, sort of get out and sort of go on their life. And so I think it's the same way when you talk about the Women's Memorial. There's so many people that did so much that we just don't say enough about it. It's gonna take you years and years and years, but keep punching, keep talking, keep doing what you're doing, because you're making, I guarantee you, you're making a difference. And again, if I can ever help you in any way, I certainly would do that. God bless you.
Thanks, SMA. Just giving us an opportunity to be heard here on your podcast is a huge, huge win for us. I appreciate you more than you know.
Oh, God bless you. Thank you so much. Thanks to Chief. I don't want to miss that. Chief Phyllis Wilson. Chief, you're jumping all over my messing up. I'm Jack Altelli, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. You've been listening to Your Next Mission video podcast. And this has been, if you're listening and you understand, it's an important subject for all of us to understand the kind of sacrifices our military women make for us. They're soldiers. I said that a minute ago, but they make a sacrifice for us. So don't forget, it's about our future. It's about our country. It's about something we just can't forget. Thank you for watching today. And please visit our website on yournextmission.org. And leave me a review. I always say, I hope it's a good one. But if it ain't, I can take it. You can also visit our partners there, who can provide you with so many services that will assist you in your transition from the military. Also, please visit our corporate partners there and see all the jobs that we have available. Please know, we want to assist you any way that we can. I'll say it again. Please know, we want to assist you any way we can. Please follow me on all my social media channels. Never thought I'd say that, but I say that every time. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. I love them. And if you enjoyed this discussion with Chief Wilson, I know that you do, because, you know, women in the military make a heck of a commitment to do things that are right for them. It's about our country. It's about making it a better country. And they're doing the right kind of thing. So educate yourself. Please like us. Again, click on that subscribe button. Don't forget, we want to hear from you. Please leave me a message or send me a text at 844-424-1134, or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Thanks again to Chief Wilson for being with us today. It was just great having her on the show, on the podcast. And I always have some final thoughts. And you know, Chief's got me so pumped up, I'm ready to jump out of this chair. But it's about our country. It's about life. It's about God. It's about the females that sacrifice, or the soldiers that sacrifice so much, that just happen to be female soldiers that have given so much for our country. Even talking just what Chief Wilson said, all the way back to the Revolutionary War, that have dedicated their lives to making this a better country. And we owe it to them We owe it to them to do all we can to understand the sacrifices they make. Go to the Military Women's Memorial and visit. Donate, do something, but just don't sit back and just say that's nice, because that's what a lot of people, in fact, one more thing I want to tell you. I always say one more thing, and that's a big thing. A lot of people say thank you. Well, we're not saying thank you. We're doing something about it. We're making something out. It's an action. It's a call to order. You know, that's what we want from all of you. Again, thanks for watching. Thanks to Cloudcast Media, New Mind Studios, of course, our four presenting sponsors, Calvary Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Homeowners. We appreciate all you do for our military. And as always, I love this part of the show. See you on the high ground. Hoo-ah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.